let's make a start. First of all, it's very exciting to be back in Landa. It's wonderful to have the opportunity to teach and to discuss a few of these very critical modern issues with you. You may recall that last year, at this sort of time of year, we had a detailed course on the development of the halachic process back from Sinai all the way through to present day. This year, I'd like to deal with a related topic, but the subject matter will be quite different. What I would like to deal with, Nes Hashem, over the next 10 sessions, is this issue, which is, does the halacha indeed change in modern times to adapt to modern circumstances? And this is a very current controversial issue. I think it always has been a controversial Jewish issue. But I noticed just recently in the winter edition of Jewish Action, which is the OU magazine, okay, reflecting the views, if you like, of centrist orthodoxy, as YU and the OU like to call themselves, that there were three very interesting articles by Rabbonim from the OU and the OU-related organizations. There's someone else that's coming through. It's a whole stream of people. We'll soon be in the summer heat, don't worry. And then we'll all be too hot in here. There were articles by Rav Hershel Schechter, Rav Tzvi Hirsch Weinreb, all about what is Masora and how does Halacha change. The reason that these articles are appearing is because there's a squeeze going on at the moment. There are people on the left wing of the modern Orthodox movement, and we'll analyze later on in the course where they're coming from, who are pushing very strongly for significant radical halachic change. In women's areas, women rabbis, in other areas as well, we'll see what kind of issues are coming up, women's aliyot, we'll see all sorts of areas. There is a reaction, of course, against that, in the more Haredi establishment, which is really digging in and saying that halacha never changes and cannot change and must not change, which itself is an interesting modern position and is not quite as easily tenable as one might think. And then squeezed in the middle, the meat in the sandwich, is what's called centrist orthodoxy, the OU, YU, who are treading this Gesher Tsar Ma'od, on the one hand trying to resist the pull of the left wing of the modern Orthodox movement towards radical halachic change, but on the other hand, trying to explain that the, if you like, intractable system of no halachic change has never been the Jewish way, and they're trying to tread this middle path. What I'd like to do with you over the next 10 sessions is put a few details to that debate. So it's not just sound bites, but it's actually Makoros, it's actually sources. I've given you an outline syllabus. Are these extra sheets down here? Yeah, if you could pass them down. These may just be... don't all scramble at once. I think this is just the outline syllabus anyway, so don't get too excited. Okay. If you look, please, at the outline syllabus, just look at the outline syllabus that I've given you, which is the English sheet. Okay. There's a lady over here who would like one. No problem. Okay. It's a bit like getting the good desserts, you know, in a hotel. You've got to get in there early, otherwise you won't get there. We wondered when we first make Aliyah why everybody at the beginning of the meal was getting their dessert and putting it on the table. We thought this was a very bizarre behavioural pattern, and then we realised, you know, if you're not in there, then you're dessertless. You're left with a fresh fruit. Okay, fine. God forbid. Let's go. If you look, please, at the syllabus, these are the areas that I'd like to cover over the coming session, starting with today. First of all, the structure of modern halacha. Really, this is what I want to deal with today, which is, why is the Gemara the beginning point for halachic discussion? Why is it that we can't go behind the Gemara and start changing the way that the Gemara structures things? That's a very important issue, which we'll see today. Next time, I'd like to start getting into the issue of Tameh HaMitzvahs. How do the reasons for the halacha how are they, if you like, formulated in the halachic process? What if the reason changes? What if the reason that Chazal gave for something, or the Torah gave for something, no longer seems to apply? In fact, it could be that the halachic determination of the Gemara now goes against the original reason that the halacha was instituted because of changes in modern times. We'll see that. Is this going to be a little bit of a tease series? Because we're going to deal with loads and loads and loads of halachic issues, and we're never going to get into any of them in great detail, because that's not the purpose. We're going to deal with at least 40 or 50 different halachic questions that come up along the way, but we're looking at it more from a methodological perspective, more from a structural perspective, so I apologize in advance if I just whet your appetite to get into an issue. We just start talking about women rabbis, and then I pull away and talk about something else. I'm sorry, that's not something that I'm going to get drawn on, because we have to look at the structure. So the reasons for halacha is coming next week. Then we have to look at something which is perhaps even a little bit more controversial than that, which is the effect of technological change on halacha, science, technology, and then we end up opening up the rather tricky subject of to what extent were Chazal aware of scientific knowledge. Did they really have scientific understanding, and what happens when the science that they describe in the Gemara seems to us to be outdated, almost primitive? What do we do with that? How does that change the halachic process? This is a tricky area, which we're going to have to tread carefully on, but we cannot deal with the subject without raising that. So that's coming up in the third session. In the fourth session, I'd like to deal with Mishkane HaTeva, which is a very fascinating halachic area where halacha seems to have changed because there's been an underlying change in the natural world, the way that people's bodies work, the way that people's experiences in the world with nature, etc., the animals. We'll have to see how that works and whether that makes sense to us, and how the modern poskim understand that, but that is a big source of halachic change. Five is another controversial area, which is not technological or natural change, but sociological change. When the Gemara lays down halachic decisions based on sociological realia of the time, the place of women in society, the place of non-Jews vis-a-vis Jews, how does that, or does that change now that women in society have a different role than they did then? Now that non-Jews and Jews have a different relationship than they did then, is it frozen, if you like, in the psak of the Gemara, or is it contingent on these issues changing? That's a bit of a sticky issue. We'll deal with that. In number six, I'd like to deal with the process of chidush. What is chidush? How does chidush differ from shinui? What is legitimate change? What is illegitimate change? And this, what Rav Aaron Lichtenstein calls a shibboleth of Das Torah. What is Das Torah? Where did it come from? Who invented it? Where, you know, how does it affect the halachic process? And who gets the right to claim Das Torah? That's an important role to play. And number six. In seven, I want to get into the issue of meta halacha. A meta halacha, which is really big halachic sort of mega issues that, if you like, underpin or overarch, if you want to make sure about the mixed metaphors, the different halachic areas of life, hashkafic issues. We talked a little bit about this in Elul, and I'd like to take that further in the seventh session. Eight, I've called pushing the envelope, which is I would like to analyze why the conservative, or the first of all the conservative movement, what they have to say about halachic process, and then look at the left wing modern orthodox, what you might even call conservadox. It's a terrible word, but you know what I mean. People that are pushing for that, and then let's analyze why people are reacting against that and how that works. And then in number nine, which will probably be the last session, and I can't guarantee these will be exactly session by session, but we'll hopefully cover all this. I'd like to look at the future of halacha. Do we believe in Yerida Hadoiris? Do we believe that the generations are declining, or do we believe that the generations are improving? How, where, and when will we get our Sanhedrin back? Have we already reached the point at which it can be reconstituted? And what will happen to halacha in the times of Mashiach? And this very interesting idea of Torah Chadasha, will we end up with a whole new system? There's a lot to say about that, very, very interesting, which I would like to save for the dessert at the end of the series. This is one occasion where you don't need to get your dessert from the beginning, because there will be plenty available by the end. Okay, I hope that gives you an outline of what we're going to cover. There's a lot of material there. Some of it is really, being discussed a lot by people today. So let's begin at the very beginning. The truth is, it's not really the very beginning, because last year we already, if you remember, and if you have your notes, last year we already talked in great detail about the halachic process between Moshe Rabbeinu and Har Sinai and the Gemara. And I don't propose to go through that again. I'd refer you to the classes from last year. We talked about the different kinds of halachic process, legislation and transmission and interpretation. We talked about the role of prophecy in that process. And really what I'm doing this time is I'm starting from the sealing of the Talmud. Because any halachic innovation today always comes up against this first basic point, which is that we cannot reopen the debates of the Talmud. Now, of course, the Reform movement totally rejected the halakhic process in its entirety. So they're not bothered by this question, because when Reform started, they moved away entirely from the entire halakhic system. So for them, this is a non-issue. The conservative movement, which we'll deal with later in the course, does subscribe somewhat to the halakhic system, and therefore they do have to deal with this problem, and we'll see, or this issue is not a problem, we'll see how they deal with the issue. But the, if you like, so-called orthodox establishment certainly has to deal with this issue, and I would like to start off by looking with you in source number one. Please feel free to ask questions at any time. I'm happy to take them, as long as they're on topic. I once had a class where I said that, and then 5 minutes later a girl put up her hand and said, "Rabbi Manning, do you have girls for Shabbos?" So, if they're the kind of questions you have, then please leave them till the end, and we can deal with them then. Let's move forward. I'm not going to read the whole source in number one, but what we have here is a little extract from the Encyclopedia Talmudic. The Encyclopedia Talmudic is an ever-growing series of big yellow books. You may have seen them on the shelves in various different places. Started off many years ago, in the 1950s and 60s, I think, but still an ongoing project. They're up to something like Chaf now, so we're about halfway through. But luckily they've done Hay, which is Halakha. So I brought you a little extract from this, and I'd like to read with you the bold areas, and we'll see where they get this from. If you look in the, this is the fourth line of number one. It says, Ravina v'Rav Ashi, Hein Soi Parah. Ravina and Rav Ashi, we'll see who they are in a minute, they are the end of Hora'ah. Hora'ah means ruling. V'chasmu ha-Talmud, they sealed the Talmud. We'll see this word Chatima coming up again and again. We'll have to see where they get this from. V'kiblum kol Yisrael, and the Jewish people as a whole accepted the Talmud. And we'll see where that comes from. Aleihem, on themselves. V'alim kol Yisrael samuchim. And on this Talmud, and on these Talmuds, the Bava and Yerushalmi, all the Jewish people now rely, they all lean on this, they all rely on this Talmud for their rulings. If you skip down a few lines to the next bold line, the bold words, the Achre Chasimat HaTalmud, and after the Talmud was sealed, Ein Rishus LaAdam L'Chadesh Davar Me'alta. Nobody has the right to be B'Chadesh anything. Now that's quite a strong statement. Nobody has the right to be mechadesh everything, anything. That's now frozen 1,500 years ago in the Chasimus HaTalmud. Okay, the ein reshus ligroya lahoisif. We have no permission to remove or to add. The listoy velivnois, or to destroy or to rebuild. The kol shekein lachloi al haTalmud. All the more so, we have no permission to argue with the Talmud. The kol advarim shebe Talmud Bavli, and anything that's written in the Talmud Bavli, chayavim kol Yisrael aleches lahem. Every Jew is required to go along those lines. This, we're going to see where they get this from in a minute, but this is a very good, I think, opening statement of why there is, if you like, a limitation on halachic change. We cannot go behind or beyond what is written in the Talmud Bavli. Now, within the Talmud, we'll see there is still room for development and analysis, but this, at the end of the day, is going to be a line which we cannot cross. Yes, you had a question?
Yes, I have a question, but you only talk about the boys learning are encouraged to make decisions. Why do they refer to...
Ah, so we'll see. That's the session number 8, or whatever that is, where it talks about Chiddush, session number 6. What is Chiddush? Ah, so we'll see. We'll talk about what is legitimate Chiddush, what is illegitimate Chiddush, and we'll talk about that. We'll deal with that, yes.
Well, it's not that we don't. Talmud Yerushalmi has been superseded by Talmud Bavli that takes account of it. It's still out there in the kind of writings of Chazal, and from time to time we see the poskim do rule out the Yerushalmi over the Bavli. But the Bavli is very much the big brother of the two Talmuds, for all sorts of reasons which we talked about last year, which I'm not going to talk about this year. Yes? Encyclopedia. We should see what I will see right now. I'm going to bring you the source for everything they just said. Okay? I just used them as an opening statement. Okay? Fine. Because, of course, you're absolutely right. The Encyclopedia Talmudic is not a very good halachic, authority for anything, but we'll see who is. What do you want? We don't have any more. I'm sorry. I could give you mine, but then I'd have to... Oh, here's one. How about that? Okay, fine. No, that's a different one. Okay, fine. Let's go. Number two. Let's look at the sources for where they get this from. The opening source is as follows. Bava Metzia, Pei Vav. Rebbe the Rebbe Nosson Seif Mishnah. Rebbe and Rebbe Nosson were the end of the Mishnah. Rebbe was, of course, Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi, who formulated the Mishnah in around the year 180 CE, and Rebbe Nosson was one of his colleagues. Okay? Rav Ashi the Ravina Seif Hara. Rav Ashi and Ravina were the end of Horah, and we need to define what that word is. The Horot is, in this sense, to rule, okay? Ruling, the word Torah comes from Horah, yeah? So, the end of Horah was Rav Ashi and Ravina. And the question is, who were these people and what did they do? Now, just historically, Rav Ashi and Ravina lived around the end of the 5th century CE, the middle of the 5th century CE. So we're talking about the year 450, 460. That is the era in which they lived, in which they, if you like, sealed the Talmud. And the word sealing appears, we see, one of the first uses of this is in number 3. So number 2 is from the Gemara itself. The Gemara talks about itself and says, Rav Ashi v'Ravina Sof Hora. By the way, it's very clear that there are many things in the Gemara text which came after Rav Ashi. That doesn't mean that Rav Ashi was the last person to put the last full stop in the Gemara, and then that's finished. That's not the case, and we'll deal with that at the end of the class. But Rav Ashi and Ravina were the last people to really lay down the principles of halacha on which the Gemara is built. Clearly things came afterwards, like this line itself, in number 2, which is clearly talking about Rav Ashi, and clearly not written necessarily by Rav Ashi, or it could have been, but we'll see later that there were other things which were after. Rav Shmuel Hanagid lived a couple of hundred years later, a few hundred years later actually, more like the 11th century, in Spain. Very interesting gentleman, Rav Shmuel Hanagid. And this was, of course, the golden age of Spain, excuse me, in which the Spanish Jews really ran the country. He was one of the senior ministers in Muslim Spain in the 1000s, a contemporary of Rashi, who lived up in Europe, although there wasn't really any correspondence between them. The Ashkenazi world at this time was a very tiny little village world up in northern France. The Sephardi world was a very large, sophisticated world. Rabbi Wein once said to me that the entire numbers of the Ashkenazi world at this point in Jewish history was around 30,000, which is about the number of Jews that live in Har Nof, probably a little bit more. That's why we're all descended, all Ashkenazim in the world are descended from this tiny little group of 30 or so thousand people, which is why we end up with all these interesting genetic connections which sometimes cause trouble, whereas the Sephardi world was an enormous world of millions of people which has a much larger gene pool. They say that 80% of all Ashkenazim are directly descended from Rashi himself. Okay, so if you want to have some yichutz, then you can... On the other hand, 100% of all Jews are descended from Avraham Avinu, so that's even better. Yeah. Okay, fine. So Rav Shmuel HaNagid in Spain says like this: But Tresha Chibru HaTalmud, the two gentlemen who wrote the Talmud, Heim Rav Ashi v'Ravina, or Rav Ashi and Ravina. And the truth is, I use the word wrote. He doesn't say the word wrote. Chibru means they put it together. The question as to whether the Talmud was written is a related question, which is not for right now, but it maybe was written slightly later. And the people who helped them will be Yemehim Nechtam HaTalmud. He uses this expression, seal. Nechtam, I put it in bold, Nechtam HaTalmud. The Talmud was sealed and therefore cannot be reopened. The issue of the sealing of the Talmud was accepted universally by pretty much everybody. I'm not going to deal with source number 4, where Rashi in source number 4 just explains what Sof Hora is. Maybe I'll just tell you just outside. Sof Horah, says Rashi, and it's a good understanding to understand how the Talmud works, means that they have the Mishnah. The Mishnah was put together in around 180. They had all sorts of discussions that had happened over the last 300 years since the Mishnah was put together, of the Mishnah, about the Mishnah, questions on the Mishnah, cases that came up. Rav Ashi and Ravina organized all of these discussions and put them together with the relevant pieces of Mishnah that they fit with, and produced this new work, which was edited and re-edited and re-edited and re-edited by Rav Ashi and Ravina, which in the end was called the Talmud. The word Talmud and the word Gemara are synonymous. The church were the people who had a difficulty with the word Talmud. They didn't like the word Talmud, and they banned the use of the word Talmud, and people started calling it the Gemara. Exactly how the church influenced the Gemara is a very interesting question, which is not ready for now, but of course the Gemaras that we have on ourselves today are the church-censored versions of the Gemara. If you want the uncensored version of the Gemara, you have to buy a little book with all the naughty bits in, with all the extra bits in, which you can buy quite happily, but you just be aware that the Gemara that you have on your shelf today is the censored version. Okay? Now, not that much was censored, but nevertheless, there are some interesting things that were taken out. So that's what the Gemara was. Says Rashi, that's what Sof Horah is, the organization of the Gemara. Now, if you wanted to know where the Encyclopedia Talmudic got all its strong language about how we cannot go behind the Gemara, so turn over to page 2. And I've brought you here four sources, 5, 6, 7, and 8, across Ashkenazi and Svardi authorities, which tell us why this is the case. Says the Rashbam. Now, who's the Rashbam? The grandson of Rashi. Okay, Rashbam, one of the important early Ashkenazi halachic authorities, he says like this: Ve'ilav the pasuk b'Gemara halacha kamoisai. Okay. If the Gemara does not paskin, or unless the Gemara paskins the halacha is X or Y, loy samchin al psak de masnisin. We never rely on the psak of the Mishnah, which is a very important point, by the way, just methodologically. We do not paskin like the Mishnah. The Mishnah is a very shorthand, soundbite-oriented book, which cannot be relied on for the final halachic ruling. It's a big mistake. When people read Mishnayos, they seem ever so straightforward, and they think, oh, look, and the answer is no, that's not what the halacha is. Sometimes the Mishnah even says the halacha is like X, and that's not what the halacha is. Because the Mishnah is a very distilled version. It's a very concentrated, like kind of petel. It's like really concentrated juice, yeah? And it needs to be first understood in the light of the Gemara to actually know what it means. So the first thing is the Rashbam says, don't you even think about paskening like the Mishnah. Aval, rather, the halachas hapsukos, but rather on the clear psak, on the halachas, on the rulings, the divrei ha'amurayim, in the words of the Amorayim, Vaday samchin, and then we can certainly rely on. The kevin shepaskum v'kasvum Rav Ashi v'Ravina, because Rav Ashi and Ravina wrote them, shehem soif ho'ra'ah, and these people are the end of ruling, vaday alayhu samchin, we must definitely rely on them. Daha kaima lan b'Bava Metzia, because we rule in Bava Metzia, the Gemara we saw just before, Rav Ashi v'Ravina soif ho'ra'ah, Rav Ashi and Ravina at the end of Horah, and here you'll see the line that the Encyclopedia Talmudic quoted. V'ha'ein adam rishai l'chadesh davar mi'ata, and no one is now allowed to be mechadesh anything, okay? V'adai kemoshe paskar achronim kainase, but rather what they ruled in those days, that's how we have to go. So the Rashbam clearly lays down, no going behind the Gemara. Okay, these rulings are also upheld by the Sephardi authorities. If you look in number 6, says the Rimigash. The Rimigash is not so famous, I don't know if anyone in the room has really even come across him, but very important. Why is the Rimigash important? Excellent. The Rimigash, excellent, top of the class. The Rimigash is the teacher of the Rambam's father, and the Rambam's father, Rabbeinu Maimon, was his only real Rebbe. And therefore the Rimigash is very much the Masora of the Rambam. The Rimigash himself was a student of the Rif. Right at the end of the Rif's life, the Rif was forced to flee North Africa. Today is not the first time that North Africa has been in turmoil. It was in turmoil then. He was forced to flee to Spain, and he found this young Talmud, the Rimigash, who became his main Talmud. Look at number 6. V'zeh ha-Talmud shelanu, halocha l'maisa hu. Our Talmud is halocha l'maisa. It's the practical halocha. Okay? Shalom nichtav ela la'acha iyun, because it was only written after a lot of care, v'dikduk, and a lot of precision.
But Kama Doris over many generations, after many editions, many different editions, and therefore it's as if it gives us the halacha l'maisa, because we have to follow, they've written down what we have to follow. And the Rambam in his Hagdama to the Mishnah says the same. Look at number 7. When all those chachamim died, and the last of them, Ravina v'Ravashi, were Ravina v'Ravashi, u'kfar nishlam ha-Talmud, the Talmud was then completed. Harikol nisha amud acharav, a everyone who comes after the Talmud, ein matarasoi ela havanus divrehem. The only purpose of everyone that comes after the Talmud is to understand their word shechibru b'levav. That's all what they wrote. Okay, alav ein lehosif, you're not allowed to add, umimenu ein ligro, and you're not allowed to subtract. Almost given the Talmud the status of the Torah, Bal Tosef, Bal Tigra, you can't add to it, you can't subtract from it. The Talmud is now a canon. It's now a holy book. It never was until then, but it now is, from the time it was sealed, a book that you cannot add to, you cannot subtract from. So you see here the Rambam, the Rashbam, the Rimigash. I'm not aware of anybody, and I stand to be corrected, I'm not aware of any authority through the entire time of the Rishonim that said, Talmud Shmalmud. We don't have to rely on the Talmud. If you disagree with the Talmud, then you can be free, feel free to express your opinion and overrule what the Talmud says. I'm not aware of any idea like that. Every single authority says the Talmud is the baseline, and from there you start. Yes. Yes, that's absolutely right. Yes, absolutely right. What is written, certainly by Rav Shmuel HaNagid and the Rambam, may have to be seen also in the light of the battle with the Karaites. The Karaites, of course, rejected rabbinic authority entirely, and therefore people have to underpin that rabbinic authority even more. That's an interesting question as to how that historical context affected the way they viewed the Talmud. I don't really know, but the fact is they viewed it this way. That's quite clear. Right. The polemic really on Torah Shebaal Peh is with the Karaites. The Muslims were not really, you know, involved in that, and the Christians never had Torah Shebaal Peh anyway. The Christians, the debate was really on the Bible and how to interpret the verses in Yeshaya, etc., about Jesus and whether they are or they aren't. That was the whole question there from the, you can read the Ramban's disputation with Pablo Cristiani, that he wrote his Sefer HaVikuach, where he debates with the Christians. He's not really debating Torah Shebaal Peh so much. The Karaites, don't forget the Karaites today, I don't know if anyone knows any Karaites. Anyone have any Karaite friends? Right, everyone, that's why everyone knows about the Karaites. There's a shul in the old city. Does anyone have a second cousin who's a Karaite? Nobody. Because the Karaites have largely disappeared. There is a certain number living in Lithuania, of all places. And there's a bunch in Egypt. There's some in Ramla. They were not just a threat. They were the majority. The Rambam, when the Rambam took over as the Rav in Fostat in the late 12th century, two-thirds of his community were Karaites. Two-thirds of his community. He had to engage in a detailed educational process to try and teach them why the Torah Shebaal Peh says what it says, etc., etc. It was a very major threat to the Jewish people. And after the time of the Rambam, the threat diminished very strongly until by the sort of modern period, the Karaites didn't represent any kind of major force in Judaism, and they don't today. Their role has been taken over by other people who have caused equal mischief since. But the Karaites, you're right, is the context of a lot of what's going on. Have a look at number 8. So what's the halacha? All these people, so the Shulchan Aruch actually rules on this issue as to the status of the Gemara. That's a very interesting thing. Look at number 8. Mihu Yesh Oimrim. This is the Ramah in the Shulchan Aruch. Now, of course, we're in the year 1500 around. Yesh Oimrim, the im nira l'dayan. If it appears to a dayan, ulibnei doira, anyone in their generation, mikayach rayas muchrachis, from clear proofs that they understand, she'ein adin kamosha huzkip poiskim, that the din is not like that which is mentioned previously in the poiskim, yochalach lakalav, they can disagree with them. Ma'acha she'ein uniska gemara, for anything which is not specifically written in the Gemara. The Ramah says a very interesting thing, which is that after the Gemara,
really the field is open. This rule that you can't go behind the Gemara says the Ramah really only applies to the Gemara. But if you're a Dayan living in the 20th century, you don't have to feel entirely bound by someone living in the 12th century, or in the 14th century, or in the 18th century. Now, this is an interesting question which we're going to deal with later on, because the implication here, and this is certainly how the Vilna Gaon understood as well, is that the authority really rests with the Gemara. But later than that, nobody has any more authority than anybody else. The Gaonim, the Rishonim, and we'll see whether the Shulchan Aruch was really accepted or not. The Vilna Gaon adds, Biur Hagra, the Al HaGemara, because on the Gemara, Ein Rishus LaHaysif Ala Ligroi, he paraphrases the Rambam from number 7, you're not allowed to add, you're not allowed to take away. Kol Shekein Lachloik, and all the more so, you're not allowed to disagree with it. Kama Shekasa, the Perik HaPayalim, Ravina Varashi Seif HaRom. So we're going to pick up later this issue as to who has authority later than the Gemara, and it may be that that is where the room lies for halachic innovation. But beyond the Gemara, that we can't do. And therefore, I think, you know, when you hear the claims from the conservative movement that, no, the Gemara was never the end of the story, the Gemara was always an evolving process, I think the onus of proof is on them to show where was that ever the understanding of the Gedolei HaRishonim throughout the period since the Gemara. On the contrary, the understanding of the Rishonim was always that what we do with the Gemara now is analyze it, maybe interpret it, but we do not disagree with it. Now, of course, analysis and interpretation can be a broad field, and we'll see how that's used next time. Yes? We'll see. We'll see. We're half an hour into a 10-week course, so things will become clearer as we go along. Now, what's interesting is that there has always actually been something of a halakhic weight to the later authorities. We're all very, if you like, almost indoctrinated with this idea of Yeridus Hadoras, that you can't argue with anyone that came before, because everyone that came before was closer to Sinai, and therefore we are smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller as time goes on. We will have a whole class dedicated to the fact that that's not so straightforward. And indeed in Halacha, we see very clear, look at number 9, this is a little quote from the Yamshel Shlomo, who is Rav Shlomo Luri, the Marashal, living at the time of the Ramah. Hello, ein halacha ketamid b'makom rav. Generally speaking, the halacha is never like the Talmud in when he disagrees with the rav. The actually is there klal hu ad avaya v'rava. That's only until avaya and rava, who were the people who really laid down the beginning of what became the Gemara. Aval, but me avaya v'rava ve'elich, from avaya and rava onwards, halacha kebasroi. The halacha always follows the later authority. So built into the halachic process is actually a weighting towards later rather than earlier authorities. And we'll see how this comes out as we go through. This is also going to give us something of a possibility for people who came later to argue on people who came earlier and not to feel embarrassed by it. And when we look and we see how Rav Moshe Feinstein and others argue quite happily on people that lived many hundreds of years before, this is to some degree where they are coming from. However, if that's the case, so why do we argue with the Gemara? We came after the Gemara. Who said the Gemara has the right to this special treatment? And that indeed is the question the Shulchan Aruch asks. The Kesef Mishnah, which was written by the Bet Yosef, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch, he writes it on the Rambam like this. If you look at number 10, he raises a question which we're then going to go on to answer over the next 20 minutes or so. It says, based in Godel Shadar Shiva, Lama Ken Rabbeinu. The Rambam, Rabbeinu, writes like this. Mimai da Ashkechen Tanai Basrai, the Pligia Kamai. Why is it, okay, that the later authorities, okay, do not argue with the earlier authorities? It's very clear that in the Rambam, he writes in principle, later authorities can argue with earlier authorities. We've seen this already. The intima in Cain amai loy pligi amuraya tonight. Therefore, why is it that indeed that the Amurai and the Gemara doesn't argue with the Mishnah? To have a whole duchter, because everywhere throughout the whole Gemara, Magshina, we ask the question, La Amora, La Amora, Mi Masnita, we always ask on an Amora from a Mishnah or a Brisa, Mi Brisa. The methodology here is very clear. Whenever anyone in the Gemara makes a statement, one of the first things the Gemara does is he jumps down on his head and says, but that contradicts a Brisa, that contradicts a Mishnah, that contradicts an earlier authority. Why doesn't the person in the Gemara just turn around and say, well, I'm later? The halacha follows the later authority. Why are you bringing me sources from 200 years ago? It's clear that doesn't happen. Ukifi Dibri Rabbeinu, according to the Rambam, who said that we go with the later authorities, Harishus Nasunan Lahem Lachloi Kal Dibri Atanaim. Surely the Gemara has the authority to argue with the Mishnah. Says no. Says Va'esh Shalom, and this is really the introduction to what we're going to talk about now. Shemiyoyim Chasimas HaMishnah. From the day the Mishnah was sealed, Kimu V'Kiblu, where are those words from? Megillat Esther. Kimu V'Kiblu, they accepted upon themselves and established Shedoyrat HaAchronim Lo Yachikval Rishon. That these later generations will not argue on the early ones. V'chein Asu, and that's exactly what they did, Gam B'Chasimas HaGemorah, when the Gemara was sealed, Shemiyom Shenechtama, from the day it was sealed, Lo Nitzen Rishus L'Shum Adam Lachlok Aleh. No one has the authority to argue with. And the question is now, why? And now we've seen that there is such a thing as the sealing of the Gemara. It seems to fly in the face of the idea that later authorities have the right to argue. So why? Why was the Gemara indeed accepted as the last word, if you like, from which everything else has to start? And that's what I want to ask now. And we'll see that there are two major approaches to this question. First of all, where is the authority of the rabbis in the Gemara? Where does that come from? Why do I have to listen to them at all? And the answer is, it's Pesukim in the Torah. The Torah itself gives authority to the rabbis, to the Sanhedrin, to make rulings which affect the Jewish people. Look at this Pesukim in number 11. We'll see what it says. Ki yipale mimcha davar l'mishpat ben dam l'dam ben din l'din ben negel l'negra. This is from Pasha Shoftim in Dvarim. Whenever there is a debate in any matter between blood and blood, this could be murder, it could be neither, it could be all sorts of issues, ben din l'din, the different ben adam l'chaveiro, monetary issues, ben negel l'negra, ritual issues, divrei ribos b'sharecha, and there's a disagreement in your town, sharecha means the base din of your town. You will get up and you'll go to the place that God chooses. That place, of course, is Yerushalayim. The Gemara, the Pesukim never refer directly to Yerushalayim. They always circumlocute, if you like, and say this is the place that God will choose. There's a reasons why, but that's not for now. You'll go to the Kohen and the Levim that live in those days. But the Rashi v'Gidul Lecha, and you will inquire, and they will tell you Es Davar Mishpat, what you have to do. And I've underlined and put these words in bold, which means they're important. You must do what they tell you to do, says God to the Jewish people. From that place that God chooses. And you must guard carefully everything they teach you. According to the Torah that they teach you, and the rulings that they say to you, ka'aseh, mitzvahs, positive mitzvah, you must do. Yamin usmal. Do not deviate from what they tell you, left or right. So it's clear that the rabbis who have this authority, which means the rabbis of the Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedrin ceased to exist shortly before the Gemara was sealed, they have the authority to legislate the Rabbonans, to interpret the Torah, to pass down the Masorah that they received from Moshe Rabbeinu. And we have a Torah mitzvah, in fact two Torah mitzvahs, a positive and a negative mitzvah, to listen to them. And if we deviate from that, yamin usmal, we are actually breaking two Torah mitzvahs. This, of course, raises the fascinating question which we dealt with last year, I believe, which is then why isn't every rabbinic mitzvah really a Torah mitzvah? Actually, why isn't every rabbinic mitzvah really two Torah mitzvahs? If I eat a piece of pork, so I broke one Torah mitzvah. If I don't like Shabbos candles, I broke two Torah mitzvahs. I didn't do what the Chazal told me to do, and I deviated from what Chazal told me to do. So that raises the interesting question as to why there is any difference in status between rabbinic law and Torah law at all, which I'm not going to get into now, but which is a fascinating argument which the Rambam deals with in his Shorash Sheni, in his introduction to the Sefer HaMitzvahs, but that's not for now. What's clear is, and what everyone agrees on, is that this is the root of rabbinic authority. Now, exactly which rabbis, exactly which kind of legislation, yeah, there's a discussion about that. But everyone agrees this is the root of their authority. So why did that authority then cease? Why did rabbis after that have this authority? So have a look now on page 3. And I want to bring you three different understandings as to why indeed the Gemara became the bottom line. The first one is from Rav Shrira Gaon. Rav Shrira Gaon wrote one of the most important pieces of work on this, which was called the Igeres of Rav Shrira Gaon. Rav Shrira Gaon lived in Bavel in around the 10th century. He was the father of Rav Hai Gaon, okay, who was the last of the Gaonim. slightly surprising to me, or maybe it's not, that nobody uses these names anymore. When's the last time you had a little kid called Hi? Hi Cohen. Sounds nice, no? Sharira? People don't use those names. What's equally, and perhaps even more perplexing to me, just off topic for a second, is why from the time of Avram Avinu until the time of the Gaonim, nobody but Avram Avinu used the name Avraham. This is one of the most perplexing questions in the entire Torah that I have. If anyone can answer this to me, there was no Avraham in all of the Tanaim va'Amoraim, in all of the Chazal, there was not one of them called Avram. People are called Yitzchak and Yaakov, and people are called Gamliel, people are called Yishmael. Yishmael is not uncommon. Nobody is called Avraham. Why did no one touch the name Avraham? And then all of a sudden, around the 9th, 10th century, everybody's calling the kids Avram. And from then on, Avram is the standard Jewish name. It is beyond my understanding as to why that should be. If you work out an answer to that, please send me an email, because you'll help me to sleep at night more. Okay, let's go. Rav Sharira Gon says the following. I've put this in English because the original was written in Aramaic, and there's no point battling through lines of Aramaic. This is from a translation by Rav Nosson David Rabinovich, which is available. He translated the whole of the Igeris, the whole of the letter, and he says the following. Now look at 12, 13, and 14. Because Rebbe saw such diversity in the teachings of our sages, Rebbe is Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, who wrote the Mishnah, even though they all shared the same underlying principles, he feared that these teachings would not endure and proliferate, and loss would ensue. He saw, look carefully, the heart was diminishing, the wellsprings of wisdom were being blocked up, and the Torah was disappearing. I translated those words. Mama'it liba, the understanding was going down, umistam mayan hachachma, and the mayan hachachma was being blocked up, umistauta Torah, and the Torah was departing. Why? Why was this happening? As Rabbi Yochanan says in Eruvin, the hearts of the earlier ones are like the entrance to the Ulam, but the hearts of the later ones are like the entrance to the Heichel. You know what he's talking about? The Ulam and the Heichel was a building in the Beit HaMikdash that looked like this. Okay? So that was the Ulam, and this was the Heichel. So it's like a figurative way of saying the earlier ones had minds like this, the later ones had minds like this. Who are the earlier ones, Rabbi Akiva? Who are the later ones, Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua? That's a quote from the Gemara. So Rav Sharira Gon says like this. The reason that the Gemara became the bottom line of Jewish thinking is because after the Gemara, we had an incredible Yeridas HaDoros. And he does subscribe to the principles of Yeridas HaDoros. The generations went down. 13. However, when the Mishnah was concluded and Rebbe died, the capacity for learning lessened. And they had to collate their various Talmuds to recite it in a uniform version. They also included in their Talmud some things which had been unnecessary for the earlier sages. Those earlier sages whose capacity for learning was great had not needed to have these concepts explained. But after the earlier sages' wisdom decreased, as we learn at the end of Sotah, but in another Gemara, since Rabbi Akiva died, the wellsprings of Torah have been blocked. This same situation existed also in the days of Rebbe. So from the Mishnah onwards, there was a major Yeridas HaDoros, and now number 14, along came the next generation, and the heart became diminished. Certain matters that had been clear to the earlier sages, now in this generation, these matters became subject to doubt. And they had to establish them in the Gemara with an exact wording. In each succeeding generation, the heart became diminished. As Rabbi Yochanan said in Eruvin, and our generation is like the eye of a fine needle. Like, if they were like the Ulam, and the next people were like the Heichel, so what are we like, says, who's this? Says Rabbi Yochanan. We are like a nothing. We're like the eye of a needle. Abaya said, we're like a peg in the wall with regards to Gemara, like trying to put a peg into the wall, okay? Oh, this is not talking about Israeli walls, making you put your fingers in the wall. It's talking about a real wall. You can't get it in. We can't get it in our heads. Rava said, we're like a finger in wax as regards logic. You press down a wax, it doesn't even make an impression, talking about solid wax. Rav Ashi said, we're like a finger in a pit as regards to forgetfulness. It's like a big disaster. The Gemara expresses in many places this idea of Yeridas HaDoros, the decline of the generations. And Rav Sharira Gon understands that the reason the Gemara is authoritative is because after the Gemara, people just weren't up to it. Simple. They just went down. Now, this is all very well, but there's a few questions on this. If there is a gradual decline of the generations, why did that all of a sudden stop after the Gemara? And if it didn't stop,
Why did the decline stop after the Gemara? In other words, if there was a decline between, let's say, the temple being destroyed, I understand the temple was destroyed, that was a major cataclysm to the Jewish people, you ended up with a decline in the generations. So the Gemara was, they were greater than later. But why then, between, let's say, the year 1000 and 2000, isn't there a decline of the generations? Why is it that we follow the opposite, we follow the later authorities? Why is it that the Vilna Gaon feels he can argue with people that came before? Okay, maybe the Vilna Gaon was an exception. But we see that the decline of the generations is not... The Rambam argues with the Gaonim. He says, why should I be bound by the Gaonim? I'm bound by the Gemara. I'm not bound by the Gaonim. So the issue of the decline of the generations that Rav Shri Ragon raises as the reason for the authority of the Talmud is not so straightforward. There's a very interesting book, if you're interested in reading further on this, by Professor Menachem Kellner. Professor Menachem Kellner is a professor in Hebrew in Haifa University. I don't know if you know him? A very interesting man, and he's written many things on many subjects, including a book called The Maimonidean View of the Decline of the Generations, which we're going to see in a second, what Rambam thinks. And it's not straightforward that the decline of the generations is everybody's approach, but we see it's definitely Rav Shri Ragon's approach. So that's number one. The reason the Talmud is authoritative is because after the Talmud, everybody became kind of less able to think. Look at B3 at the bottom. Naturalistic causes. The Rambam rejects this completely. And this source we need to look at in some detail. I apologize, there's a lot of Hebrew. But we need to look at this because this is the Rambam's understanding as to why the Gemara is authoritative. And it's nothing to do with the decline of generations. Like the Rambam's understanding of many things, it's much more naturalistic. Meaning what? Meaning it's a result of natural processes, not some kind of supernatural hand that came and changed things in a certain way. And we'll see now why the Rambam understands that we follow the Gemara, but we're not bound by people afterwards. Look at number 50. It says the Rambam like this. This is taken from his introduction to the Mishnah Torah. The Rambam's Mishnah Torah was his magnum opus in Halacha. He wrote this towards the end of his life. And in the beginning, he writes an introduction where he defines how he got his Masorah, where he gets his authority from. So look at number 50. Ravina Ravashi hain soch chachmei ha-Gemara. Ravina Ravashi are the end of the rabbis of the Gemara. Ravashi, who's the chibar ha-Gemara, ha-Bavlis? He's the one that put together the Gemara Bavlis. And again, he doesn't say he wrote it. He chibar, he put it together. He connected it. The writing may have happened later. But Eretz Shinar, in the land of Shinar, which is Babel, which is today Iraq, okay? After Shechibah Rabbi Yochanan Gemara Yerushalmi, after Rabbi Yochanan put together the Yerushalmi, but Kamoi Me'ashan, about 100 years before. By the way, the Yerushalmi was not written in Yerushalayim. It was called the Gemara Yerushalmi in the Kollel for Yerushalayim. There were no Jews living in Yerushalayim at the time that the Yerushalmi was written. The Jews were living in the Galil and other places, but Yerushalayim was free of Jews at that stage because Jews were not allowed to live there by the Byzantines and the Romans. Okay? The Inyan Shnei Gemaras. What is this issue of these two Gemaras? Who perish divrei ha-Mishnayos? It's a commentary on the Mishnah. Ubir and Kuser and an explanation of its depths. Udvarim shenitchadshu b'chol beis din u'beis din miyamos Rabbeinu Hakadosh and all the new things that had come up from the time of Rabbeinu. That's Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. The ad chibur ha-Gemara until the time of the Gemara. Umishnei ha-Gemaras umipinat Tosefta's from these Gemaras and from the Tosefta umisar misifra umisifrei. And these are other books written by Chazal. They contain all the information about what is allowed, not allowed, tamei, tahor, etc. As they had received from Moshe Rabbeinu going down to from Har Sinai. And again, that's not exactly how it happened. We talked about that last year. Now, here's the key paragraph, the second paragraph. Nitsa Rabbeinu Ravina Baravashi V'chavreihem. So we now find that Ravina and Ravashi and their colleagues, Soif Gedoli Chachmei Yisrael, they are the end of the Gedolim of Chachmei Yisrael, U'me'atikim Torah Shebal Peh, and they are the end of the people who really wrote down Torah Shebal Peh. V'shegazru Gezeres V'hitkinut HaTakonas, and they are the ones who made Gezeres and Takonas and decrees, V'hinhigu Minhagas and created Minhagim, Upashta gezeira sam v'takana sam u'minhagoy sam v'chol Yisrael v'chol makoymos moshvoy sam, and their ruling spread through the entire Jewish people. Now, here's the key: the achar beis din shel Ravashi, but after the beis din Ravashi, shechibah haGemara, who wrote the Gemara, the gamru b'yamei benoin, it was finished in his son's time. Nitpazru Yisrael v'chol haaretzot, the Jewish people were scattered amongst all the lands. Pizur Yeter, a very significant dispersion.
They ended up in the far, far, far lands. The Rafsa Katata
Katata, like fighting, increased the oilam in the world. The Nishtavshu Hadrochim, and the roads became impassable. Begiyasa is because of armies and bandits. The Nitmat Talmud Torah.
And that's why Talmud Torah went down.
Rambam's very interesting. Nothing to do with some innate decrease in the quality of people's brains or learning. It's a practical issue.
The reason the Talmud was sealed was because after the Talmud, everything went downhill. We entered into the Dark Ages. The Babylonian authorities became very oppressive, which is what indeed happened. And the Jews were thrown out, and they had to leave, and they had to go to the ends of the world. And you just didn't have the centers of learning that you had at the time of the Gemara. Okay? The Loi Nichnasu Yisrael Lilmud B'Yeshivoseihim, the Jews were unable to enter to learn in their yeshivas, Alothim, for Revavos, in their thousands and tens of thousands, K'moy Shehayu Mikodim, like they had been previously. Elamit Kavtsim Yechidim, there were a few individuals, Seridim, the remnants, Asher Hashem Kari B'chol Ir V'Ir, which Hashem called, if you like, in every town, B'chol Medina Medina, V'Oiskim B'Torah, they used to learn Torah, U'mevinim B'chibure HaChachamim Kulam V'Yodim Mehem Derech HaMishpat Heif. B'chol Beistin, a third paragraph, and any Beistin, Sha'amad Achar HaGemara, who rises after the Gemara, B'chol Medina Medina, in any country, the Gazar or Hiskin or Hinhig, Lidnei Medina Osoi, and they decide to make Gezeras or Tekonas or Minhagim for their people, or Lidnei Medina's rabbis, or for the general nations, Loi Pashtu, okay, Ma'asav B'chol Yisrael. Their deeds did not spread through the Jewish people. Why? Mipnei Rechoik, Moshe was saying, because they just lived too far away, V'shibush Adrachim, and the roads were impassable. The Hayos based in Shal Oisa Medina Yechidim, and since that based in were effectively individuals, were based in Agadol Shal Shivim the Echad Bottle, and there was no longer a Sanhedrin, Mikamashanim for many years, Kodim Chibagam before the Gemara, the Fikach Ein Kaisim Anshe Medina Zu Lin Hoyte Minag Medina Acher. Therefore, one country can no longer force any other country to go like them. No one has authority anymore. The Ein Oimrim the based in Zel, Igzor Gezerah, Shagazra based in Acher, Medina Zu. No, you can't force any other based in to make a Gezerah that you decided to make. The Chain Im Lamed Echad Meha Ga'onim Shederach HaMishpa Kachu. And similarly, if any of the Ga'onim decided this was the Halacha, V'nisbar the based in Acher She'amad Achrav, and another based in came later, She'ein Zederach HaMishpat, HaKosav B'Gemara, because, and that's not what's written specifically in the Gemara, Ein Shayim Lemishan, you don't have to listen to the first one. El Elamisha Adas Noti L'Dvarav Bein Rishon Bein Acher. Now, it doesn't matter if you're after or before. The Rambam now fits much better, if you like, with our understanding of the halachi process. It's nothing to do with your readers like Doris. It's a simple historical fact. The Jewish people at the time of the Gemara were together, they lived together, they were in the same place, they were accepted by all the Jewish people, and that was the end of that. After that time, you had pockets. You had Sephardim, Ashkenazim, Yemenites. Nobody's going to tell anyone else what to do, because they're going to turn around and say, well, why should we listen to you? We didn't accept what you said. That's why when the Gemara decides that chicken is fleishig, so all Jewish people now have to keep chicken as fleishig. But when later communities decided that fish was fleishig, so then they can do what they like. I don't have to listen to you. You're not the Gemara. I never accepted what you said. You can keep your own minhagim. I'll respect them, but I don't have to do them. And that's why a number of Sfarim keep halachas of not mixing fish and milk. And if a group of Ashkenazim decide for whatever reason it gets into their head that they're going to not eat kidneys on Pesach, so the Sfarim are going to look at this and they're going to say, we don't know what got into your head, but that's fine. We respect you, and you can keep your own minhagim. But don't think about it telling us that we can't eat kidneys. The Gemara says explicitly, you can't eat kidneys on Pesach. You decided to keep a minhag. That's your business. Your basin has no authority over ours. No, but if the Gemara doesn't say you must eat kidneys, if the Gemara said there's a mitzvah to eat kidneys, then you couldn't have a minhag not to eat kidneys. The Gemara says it's like anything. You can eat, you know, you can't eat chametz. Everything else, you can do what you like. So they decided, for whatever reason, they were going to eat kidneys. Now, this is very important, because according to the Rambam, the authority of the Gemara is socio-political, in the sense that the Jewish people accepted it because of the realities that came afterwards. We were unable to have a community that came together again. Of course, the implication of this is that if everyone comes together again, is this something that can now change? The implications of Yerida Tadoris is that things are going down, 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 and down.
By the way, Eurydice and Dorus, these two worldviews, the worldview that things are going down and the worldview that things are not necessarily going down, have an impact on how you view Mashiach. Do you view Mashiach as the final thing that happens when everyone's hit rock bottom? And Mashiach comes basically to say, if things get any worse, then, you know, it's going to fall off the edge. Or is Mashiach the end of the pinnacle of the process of you working up towards Mashiach? It's a whole different worldview. Which is why the Rambam's worldview of Mashiach is it's not miraculous. Because it doesn't have to be miraculous. Because basically there is no concept that everything's getting worse and worse and worse. Everything can be getting better and better and better till eventually you reach a time when the human race is able to achieve the level of Mashiach, which is that we won't fight each other and we won't kill each other, but there's no miracles. Whereas if you take a Eurydice Hadoros worldview, the only way you can hit Mashiach is if Mashiach descends from the sky. Because how can you have a world which... Is that true? Things are getting worse? If you take a snapshot of the way that people treat each other in the world in 2011... And you take it 1,000 years ago in 1,011? People as a whole. Is the world more civilized today than it was 1,000 years ago? Of course it is. Of course it is. Now, you know something? It's a process. But as a whole, does the human race have more civilization now than it did 1,000 years? I think the answer is yes. We've had some. Okay, so fine. You're right. There's dangers. Look, you can look. I'm not here to. My view is irrelevant. Maybe you'll decide the world is less civilized now. Fine, Poseidon, you read it, Adairus. There are two different worldviews on this. And you see, those two worldviews, which, you know, in a rather crude way, equates to more of a Haredi and a modern Orthodox worldview, but we'll see that's not quite so straightforward. The connection is because the way you view. We'll see. There's a strong. We'll see. There's a very strong connection. It's because one worldview treats Maimonides as a rational guideline, and the other looks for more of a kind of supernatural guide. We'll see. These two worldviews will affect your understanding of the authority of the Gemara, and therefore will affect our ability to reconstitute a Sanhedrin today. And there have been people who've been pushing to reconstitute a Sanhedrin today. Indeed, there are still people who are still pushing for that, especially in the light of modern events with the state of Israel. If you take Rosh Uragon's view on that, then it's an irrelevance. I mean, it's almost a joke. You can have a Sanhedrin now. Who are we? If you take the Rambam's view, it's not so straightforward. So look at the last paragraph. All of these things that, look at the last paragraph 15, all these things that came after the Gemara, habavli, and here's the key, but all the things that are in the Babylonian Talmud, kol Yisrael aleches bahem, every Jew in the Jewish people has an obligation to follow them, v'kaifin kol ir v'ir, and we will force every town, v'komedino medina, in every country, linhag b'cholam in hagosh en agu chachmei ha-gemara, to follow the rules of the Gemara, v'ligzor gezerasam, v'lalecha b'tachanasam, to follow their rules, to follow their gezeras. They said, keep second day Yontif. We cannot stop keeping second day Yontif. It says in the Gemara, second day Yontif is an obligation, and therefore we are not able to go beyond that. V'hoyel, but I'm not talking about in Israel, I'm talking about in, you know, Monsi. Since the Jewish people as a whole agreed upon, accepted, it was a communal thing, accepted the Gemara. Therefore, you see those two worldviews, the Shri Ragon worldview and the Rambam's worldview as to why the Gemara is authoritative. Let's turn over to a second for source number four, page number four rather. I just want to show you a slightly more Kabbalistic understanding, which is interesting, although I'm not sure the Rambam would have much to say about it. If you look in source number 17, 18, and 19, 16 is the Seder Kabbalah of the Ravid, which is a very important sefer from the Middle Ages as well on this, which I'm not going to get into so much now. But there is an interesting issue of this 2,000 years of Torah. Now, people make a lot of this today. People make a lot of this. The Gemara says, the famous Gemara, that the world, the history is divided into three bunches of 2,000 years. There's from 0 to 2,000, there's the years of Tohu Vavohu, of sort of vague nothingness, okay? And then you have the 2,000 years of Torah, and then you have the 2,000 years of Mashiach. So I'm sure everyone in this room has heard that idea, hence the idea that Mashiach has to come by the year 6,000. This is an offshoot from this idea. So I brought you here in 17, 18, and 19, a
a quote from a very interesting book written by someone called Rav Zacharia Fendel.
Rav Zacharia Fendel passed away recently,
and in America about a month, yeah, about a month and a half, 2 months ago. I saw a note of his Lavoya at the end of January, but he wrote a number of svarim on this issue of Jewish history and the development of Torah, and he writes this in his book here, Legacy of Sinai. It is of interest to note, source number 17, that the compilation of the Mishnah, which represented a major turning point in the process of Torah transmission, took place in, and I'm afraid there's a typo here, I apologize, it should say 3948. Please change that because it's very important. Otherwise, the whole thing doesn't make any sense. I just tagged the wrong word. Took place in 3948. This was also precisely 2,000 years after the birth of Abraham in 1948. You can never forget 1948. 1948 was, in Jewish years, was the birth of Avraham Avinu. 52 years after this date was the end of the fourth millennium, which the sages refer to as the culmination of the two millennia of Torah, which began when Avraham Avinu began to disseminate the Torah at the age of 52 in the year 2000. In other words, Rav Fendel is pointing out a very beautiful symmetry, which is that the Avraham Avinu started his ministry to the world at the age of 52. You see this from the Midrashim, etc., etc. That was the beginning of the 2,000 years of Torah. Those 2,000 years are up, okay, at the end of the Mishnah. And therefore, why is it that the Mishnah and the Talmud has authority? It's because it was given, it was put together in these 2,000 year window, the Torah can be downloaded, if you like. As soon as that 2,000 year window closes, that's the end. There's no more download. Everything that's happening now is just analysis. And we'll come back to this point, analysis. When the Chazon Ish talks about the Simani Trefus, where the Gemara says that an animal which has certain simonim, that if he cannot live more than 12 months, that animal is treif. So we have now animals with these exact simonim that live happily and healthily for years and years and years. So are these animals now kosher? So one of the arguments he brings is that whatever is defined as kosher and treif, as osser and mutter, as chayev and pater, is only what was derived in these 2,000 years of Torah, because after these 2,000 years, the windows closed. That's it. Finished. This is much more of a, if you like, a mystical understanding as to why the Gemara might have authority. In fact, Rabbi Fendel writes here, number 18, actually, the two millennia of Torah came to a close shortly after the death of Rebbe's greatest Talmud, Rav, in 4,000... What? Shortly before the death. What did I say? You see, Torah Shabbat Peh. Shortly before the death of Rebbe's greatest Talmud, Rav, in 4007. While Rav was one of the earliest Amoraim, he was the last Godel who also held, Tanaitic status. Rav, Tana, Apolik. Rav was also a Tana. Thus it may be said that the two millennia of Torah came to a close at the end of the Tanaitic period. And I brought you also another source in number 19, from perhaps a less religious background, which paraphrases the same idea from something called the Medieval Jewish Chronicles, which is put together by Adolf Neubauer from Oxford. It's the same idea. So we see this as well. And therefore, there you have three understandings, and we'll build on those in the next few sessions. We're not finished yet today. We have one more thing to do. We have three understandings as to why the Gemara has authority. That it has authority, everybody agrees. We saw that at the beginning of the class. Why does it have authority? Either because, as Rav Shri Ragon says, you read a Sadeiris, after the Gemara, we all fell off the edge of the cliff, okay? With all the questions that that raises as to what about later authorities. Or, according to the Rambam, the reason the Gemara has authority is because of a historical reality. Up until the time of the Gemara, we were all together. After the time of the Gemara, we were just too scattered and separate to have universal acceptance. Or, according to this perhaps more mystical understanding, that the 2,000 years of Torah were up, and once it's up, it's up. And then there's nothing more that we can do. Yes? So, you're asking a good question. This is one opinion in the Gemara which says that the world is divided into 2,000, 2,000, 2,000. Everybody accepts this as being, if you like, absolute. The question is, who said? Many, many things are written in the Gemara, some of which we go by, and some of which we don't. What is the Rambam going to do about all those Gemaras about Yerida Sadeiris? The Rambam has no problem saying, we don't go like that Gemara, or we don't go like this Gemara. He's not bound by every single opinion in the Gemara. So this, I was in a shir once, and someone told me, they were told by a Rav, that Mashiach has to come by the year 6000. It's not possible that Mashiach can't come by the year 6000. Why is that? According to this understanding from this Gemara, 100%, I agree. Who said that has to be the case? Who said that's definitely going to happen? I think it's a little bit overstated to say that there can be no other way of viewing world history than this 2000, 2000, 2000. Although it is a legitimate view in Chazal, and therefore we have to take it seriously. Yes. The last 2000 is the 2000 years of Mashiach, meaning the 2000 years in which Mashiach can come, followed by the 1000 years which represents the Shabbos. This cycle, of course, is very clearly defined elsewhere as well. Six and then a seventh. You know, 6 days of the week and then Shabbos. 6 years of the Shemitah cycle and then Shemitah. Six Shemitah cycles and then etc. etc. Or seven Shemitah cycles and the oval, etc. So we see how this works from there, but you ought to know about it, but it's not necessarily the only way of looking at it. Let's look at the last thing, and then we will leave it for today. Just look over the page at number 5, please. Page 5, rather. This will serve as an introduction to next week's class. One of the reasons that we cannot now go override the authority of the Gemara is this idea called Davar Shebeminyan, something which was made with an authority. We no longer have the authority to override it. Let's have a look at this. And this is really, as I say, an introduction, if you like, to what we're going to do next time. Okay, source number 22. This is from a Mishnah in Eiduyos. And it says as follows. V'lama matkirin divrei hayochid bein hamarubim. Why do we find in the Mishnah that the minority opinions are quoted amongst the majority opinions? Hoyel v'ein halacha elek divrei hamarubim. Since the halacha only follows the majority, what is the purpose of including minority opinions? And answers the Mishnah. She'im yira beistin es divrei hayochid. Because later, if a later beistin wants to pick the minority opinion, the yismuch alav, they can rely on it. She'ein based in yochel levatel divrei based in chaveiro, ad she'yir godol mimenu b'chochma minyan. Because no based in later can ever override an earlier based in, unless it is greater in wisdom and number. Number here means following, rather than the number of people on the based in, because there was a finite number of the people on the based in. Ha'yir godol mimenu b'chochma, if it's greater in wisdom, avaloi b'minyan, but not in following. B'minyan, if it's greater in following, avaloi b'chochma, but not in wisdom. Ein yochel levatel dvarav, it cannot overrule an earlier based in. Until it's greater in both Chochma and Minyan. Now, what the Rambam does with that is as follows. The Rambam paskens in the last source, which I've called here number 25, although I think the numbering has got a bit kind of out of order. It should say number 23. It says as follows. The Rambam, when he paskens this idea, says the following. He says there's three kinds of halacha which this applies to. Begin Aleph. This is in Hilchas Mamre. Says the Rambam. Based in Godel, Shedarshu be'echas min hamidus, the based in HaGodel, the Sanhedrin, which darshened, means interpreted the Torah, with one of the midas. What do I mean by the midas? We talked about this last year. The Yud Gimel midas, the different rules that Moshe Rabbeinu received on Har Sinai, through which Chazal were able to create, certainly in the view of the Rambam, create new halacha doraita, create new Torah halacha through the ages. Throughout what they saw, shahadin kach v'danu din, that they think the din is such and such, and they rule on that. The amud achreihim based in acher, and then a later based in arises. The niraloy, and it seems to that later based in tam acher, a different reason. Listor oisai, and they want to contradict it. Harizet soiser, they're allowed to contradict it. V'dan kifimash nirabeinav, and they can rule whatever they wish in these yud gimel midas. Shnei amar ala shofet. You have to go to the judge in your times. You only have to follow your Sanhedrin. Now, of course, we no longer have any Sanhedrin, which is the reason why nobody can reopen a Chumash, start looking at Psukim and say, God inspires me to interpret it like this. It's clear, according to the Rambam's understanding of Halacha, that this was a process that went on until the Sanhedrin ended. I.e., Chazal were able to look in Psukim and say, using the rules that God gave us, this is how God wants us to understand them. And what's interesting from the Rambam is that later Sanhedrin can overrule an earlier Sanhedrin. There is no rule of Godel b'chochma or b'minyan. There is no concept like that. By the way, this is one of the sources for the Bris Kerov when he talks about Rus. I mentioned this last year, but it's an interesting example. When Ploni Almoni is approached by Boaz, and Boaz says to Ploni Almoni, do you want to marry Rus? She's a Moabite, you know. And Ploni Almoni says, I can't marry her. Why can't I marry her? because I'll mess up my kids. I'll mess up my kids. So says the Briskarov, what kind of an answer is that? Why doesn't he say, I can't marry her because I hold she's not eligible for marriage. She's a Moabite. I can't marry a Moabite. It's nothing to do with this kid. It's to do with him. The Briskarov explains that what Ploni Almoni is saying to Boaz is, look, you're the god of Hador. You're the head of the Sanhedrin. You rule that a Moabite woman is kosher. That's nice. I'll marry her. Because you're the Rav, I'll follow your psak. That's great. But what happens if in 100 years from now, some other Sanhedrin comes up, like the Rambam says, and decides that a Moabite is not kosher? And all of a sudden, all my kids are off the scale. I'm not prepared to take that risk. Boaz says, fine, I'm prepared to take that risk. But what's clear is that there was a potential that these halachas would be overruled. So that's stage number one. Bet says, based in Shigazra Gezera or Tiknu Takana, Tafnu Takana, a Beisdin who made a takana, not interpretation, new legislation, then Higu Minag, and they created a Minag, who Pasha Tadava B'chol Yisrael, and the whole of the Jewish people accepts it. By the way, this is a condition to any rabbinic law, was that the Jewish people accepted it. The Gemara lists a number of times when Chazal wanted to make a new rabbinic law, and the Jewish people just said, no way, it's too much, we're not doing it. And that's it, it has no authority. But once the Jewish people have accepted this as a rabbinic law, the Amad Achrehim based in Acheron, and a later based in rises, Ubikesh Levatel Dvorim Harishonim, and they want to overrule the earlier based in, Ulakor Oisa Sakona, and to overrule that Sakona, Oisa Gezerah, and all that Gezerah, but Oisa Minhag, and that Minhag, Einu Yochel, they are not able to do so, Achie Godel Min Harishonim Bechachm Aminyan, only if they are greater in wisdom and number. If they're only greater in one, then they can't. And look at what he's done. And this is our introduction to next time. Afilu bottle hatam. Even if the reason has gone away, the reason that the early authorities made that gezerah, even if that reason no longer applies, or they made that sakana, they cannot overrule it until they are greater than them. Which is... greater in chokhmah, greater in meaning. Now, is there any potential for us to be greater in chokhmah and greater in meaning than the Gemara? The answer is no, because the Rambam has already ruled that the Gemara has been accepted for whatever reason it was accepted, and everyone that comes after the Gemara is not prepared to override the Gemara. And therefore, it seems built in to the system is that if the Gemara gives a reason for something, and that reason no longer applies, it doesn't help us, because since we are not greater in Chochmah and Minyan than the Gemara, because we can't be greater in Minyan, greater in Chochmah maybe we could be, because the Rambam doesn't believe in Yeridus Hadoros maybe. But greater in Minyan means following. He just said you can't be, because the Gemara had the following of the entire Jewish people. Whereas, you know, Ploni Almoni, not the same one from the Megillah, but someone else who lives in, you know, Brooklyn, or lives in Yemen, or lives in Morocco, or lives in Israel, he cannot possibly be greater in Minyan than the Gemara, because he's only followed by his people. And therefore, it seems that we are now locked in. We'll see next time, it's not so straightforward. We are locked in to rules, but even when the reason goes away, there's nothing we can do. Okay? The last thing he writes, and this will finish, in Gimel, says as follows. What does that apply to? But Dvarim Shalai Osra Oysan Kedelasa Siag. This is only things which they didn't make in order to create a siag, like a fence around the Torah. Ela Kashar Dine Torah, but like other Dine Torah. Aval Dvarim Shirao based in Ligzor, but if the based in decided to make a gezero, well, Asra Niyas Siag, or to make a fence around the Torah, in Pashat Yisuron, if that became widespread, B'chol Yisrael and the whole Jewish people, Ain based in God Lacher, no later based in Yochel La'akron can uproot it, or La'atira and allow it, Afilu Haya Godel Min Arishenim, even if they're greater than the first ones. So you know you have three kinds of halacha. Let's just summarize to understand, because this will prepare us for next time. There are three kinds of halacha. The original process of interpreting using the Yud Gimel Midas, so that's like any generation can do whatever it wants, as long as you have a Sanhedrin. The reason we can't do that now is we don't have a Sanhedrin. If we get a new Sanhedrin, so then that's interesting. What's going to be if we get a new Sanhedrin? That's number one. Number two, Gezeras or Takanas, which Chazal made, not in order to protect the Torah, but general things, keep Hanukkah, keep Purim. Later generations could only overrule them if they're greater in Chochmah and Minyan.
Yeah, by Chazal.
Correct. Correct, correct. No, he said he can't unless you're great in Chochmah and Minyan, and then therefore he said you can't because you're not great. And the last thing he says is things which were made by Chazal as a protective measure. I don't know, muksa, things like that. So even no one's ever going to be able to overrule them, even if they're great in Chochmah and Minyan. So if you were waiting for your new Sanhedrin in order to be able to, I don't know, move muksa on Shabbos, says the Rambam, I've got bad news for you, it ain't going to happen. We'll talk in the last session about what's going to happen with Mashiach, when Mashiach comes, if we even know what's going to happen. But for now, let's just understand, to summarize today's class, the Gemara has an undisputable authority in the eyes of all of the authorities since then. That authority is based either on its superior standing in Chochmah and Yeridus Haderus afterwards, its superior acceptance by the Jewish people and the fragmentation afterwards, the 2,000 years of Torah or not, and the idea of Davashe B'Minyan, that we are not able to overrule things which were made by a greater authority unless we're greater in Chochmah Minyan, something which is, or at least seems, practically impossible. Next time, Be'ezrat Hashem, we will discuss at least 10 or 15 areas where we have indeed been able to overrule Halacha for reasons that we'll discuss next time. Okay? Have a good day. We'll see you then. What's this? We'll see. See ya.